Fathers and Daughters, written by Anthea Fraser and read by Margaret Tysack.
Prologue, The Present Day. Every year, Faye Nelson wished, uselessly, that her family would ignore her birthday, and each year they insisted on celebrating it. Even worse, this year they were sure to invite Roger, which she certainly didn't want, though there was no way of saying so. No doubt she was being difficult and ungrateful, as Ellie didn't hesitate to point out, but she resented having to feign appreciation year after year when she would much have preferred to opt out of the whole thing, as Ellie, of all people, should have realised, Faye thought crossly, closing the front door behind her. She'd told her often enough. But here, as so often, her sister put the girls' wishes first. "It's because they love you," she would say, when Faye protested. "Anyway, why this hang-up about your birthday when all the rest of the year you thoroughly enjoy socialising?" "Surely you remember," Faye wanted to scream at her. "It was on my birthday that Jeremy left me." But that was something else she couldn't say. Jeremy's name was never mentioned these days. Even Laura, with whom there'd been so many scenes in the past, had stopped talking about him. Yet it was through Jeremy that Faye had acquired Sandford Lodge. At the gate, she turned to look back at it, serene and unchanging through all the vicissitudes that had taken place within its walls. She and Ellie had loved it all their lives. "It was built for your great-grandfather," Gamma would tell them on childhood visits. "When he died, it came to Grandpa and me, and in due course your parents will live here." Though they never did, Faye thought now, starting down the hill. During those last weeks of Gamma's life, the atmosphere at home had been strained, her mother moving about tight-lipped, her father stubbornly silent. There had been low-voiced discussions behind closed doors, and she and Ellie, shamelessly eavesdropping, had been appalled to discover that their mother had no intention of moving to Sandford. It was the same summer that Faye had met Jeremy. "Damn," she said aloud, startling a boy who was cycling past her down the hill. This was another problem with her birthday. As it approached, so inevitably did the memories, as sharp and painful as if they'd happened yesterday instead of, incredibly, 27 years ago. Handsome, charming Jeremy, the all-round sportsman, county cricket player, tennis ace, and most glamorous of all, silver medalist in the 68 Olympics. No wonder that at 19 she'd fallen hopelessly in love with him. Had she known what the future held, would she still have married him? Come to that, would she later have married Patrick? How could she have known that both her husbands would leave her without so much as a word of explanation, that one of them would later be murdered, and the other disappear without trace? "Oh, damn," she said again, more forcibly, feeling for a handkerchief. She was coming to the foot of the hill, and across the road the river, glinting in the sunlight, blurred before her eyes as the old painful questions, never far below the surface, reared up at her again. Was there any way she could have stemmed the course of events? Was she personally responsible for all that had happened? But this was no time for hypothesis. She'd be late for work. Faye wiped her eyes, blew her nose, and set off purposefully along Riverside Walk. Rushiford was an attractive town, occupying both banks of the River Rush, which threaded its way alongside the main shopping street, crossed by a series of stone bridges whose single traffic lanes caused frustration to both residents and tourists. In a comfortable mix of old and new, the town boasted a Norman church, a market whose charter dated from the 12th century, a theatre and concert hall, several good restaurants, and a plethora of specialist galleries and boutiques. In the last year, it had also acquired a state-of-the-art shopping mall.